Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Diener Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. That's right, it's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Osarski, your Bengals beat writers at Cincinnati.com for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Jim, have you recovered from the excitement of Combine Week?
Oh, yes, I've recovered, without a doubt. I don't know. It didn't – Combine Week is – I don't know how I feel about it. I just feel weird. Yeah. It's like I feel weird at the Senior Bowl, like weigh-in, but thankfully it's just, you know, a day. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the Combine, that's all it is just dudes doing stuff that kind of applies to football. And I just, I don't know. It's not my thing.
it's not for everybody, you know. I love a spider chart. So, like, you know, I like it to see how the spider charts fill out and how Derwin James is in, like, the 85th percentile of every single metric. And that stuff I do think is – and it is to me, it is interesting to see how much people then move their values, the pundit value, up and down, where I think in actuality the draft boards don't move much except in the case of, like, an Orlando Brown or – you know, on the flip side of it, like a Derwin James or, you know, somebody that really pops in a direction that you did not anticipate necessarily. But hey, it was a lot of good athletes out there. A lot of excitement. And you know what it leads to? More importantly, Jim, you know what it leads to?
Mock drafts.
Mock drafts. Leads to mock drafts, mock draft. I know people like, they're like, Paul, you're like the only bro in America that has not done 1.0 yet. What is going on with you? Even Hobson did 1.0, earliest media mock draft ever.
I know.
Trying to show me up. It was like, she's trying to stick it to me. I like to wait for the combine and I like to add with a little flair, have some quotes from a lot of different people about each of those players and feel like I can more accurately after the combine go into exactly who the conversation pieces are for the Bengals in that range and who could kind of screw them, who could slide. That would be good. I just like to have a little bit better of a feel for that talking to actual people about it, because while boards are sort of set, I mean, until you really get in there and mix it up with a lot of the staff and get the guys in front of you, it's hard to give that true gauge. So it's up. What did you think, Jim? Are you already breaking me down? I saw you quibbled. You used quibble.
I did quibble. Not, you know, I do think McGlinchey's going to be the guy at 12. The only way that doesn't happen is if somehow he's taken before then, and I don't I don't see that, and neither did you. My quibble is just because I'm getting a greater sense that the Browns are going to brown.
Dude.
So it really has nothing to do with, like, who you have in terms of the names. It was more of, I think the Browns are going to brown. They're going to brown all over themselves yet again.
And then, you know what I mean? How do you have them brown? Like, what is browning all over themselves in your mind this year?
Not getting Kirk Cousins, but some other free agent quarterback yet again, passing on a QB at number one.
They're going to do it, aren't they?
And then kind of, yeah, I think they are going to do it. And then to me, once they pass on the QB at one, honestly, I've been waiting and nagging you for mock draft 1.0, but I've already switched my gears to I want the Paul Daner Jr. trade mock draft.
That's coming.
Like when you do your
it's coming.
When you do your trade
one. I know. So I just got this one up and you already want the next one.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's in the past. You know what? You got to move forward. As Bill Belichick says, we're not here to discuss the past.
We're on to trade mocks.
We're on a trade mock. Just because I just think once they take Saquon Barkley number one, then all hell's going to break loose because the Giants are now – like you're going to get that weird, holy cow. And then the Colts are going to be like, wow, maybe we could get Bradley Chubb at 6. Like, you know what I mean? Like I just think craziness is going to happen once they take Saquon Barkley. Now, granted, they have 4, you know, so they're going to get a QB, but I just think it's like the fact that they're going to be willing to say or have a rate. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that was my quibble, and it's not because of you. It's more of I think the Browns are going
to
brown.
Yeah, well, I know, and you have to take that into account. I just cannot believe for a franchise that has been absolutely dogged by the quarterback issue forever, you have the number one pick with 4 potential top 10 quarterbacks on the board. You can't just get it together, figure it out, and just pick a guy and go try to win games. I cannot believe that you would really do that so you can get a running back. I don't care if he's the next Herschel Walker, okay? It is a passing league, and more so than it being a passing league, you have been the Browns, and there's the jersey with all the quarterbacks. Because why? Because not since Tim Couch have you drafted a guy anywhere near number one, and you have the opportunity. And the only way that the Browns could brown it up is by just saying, we'll take a running back and we'll just hand it off 82 times with 9 guys in the box. And we'll call that our offense. I mean, it's just unbelievable. If they do that, I won't be stunned. I will just say, wow, I really thought bringing in John Dorsey would help them leave the browning of themselves. But apparently you get brainwashed the moment you sign your contract there to only do dumb crap. So, I guess we'll see. I'm going to try to believe that they're not actually going to do that for now. But if they do, what a joke they'd be. What a joke they would be.
So I did enjoy your mock draft, generally speaking, because I have been teasing you about it for the better part of January and all of February. Yeah. I do think you were right on with the Bengals and the Packers.
Yeah, and it could be Connor Williams. I mean, maybe he ends up being a guy that they really like. I don't know. It just feels like the need is going to trump the BPA. And I mean, I love Vita Vey. I love if Denzel Ward were to fall, I know people would freak out at the first round corner again, but the concept of the next 5 years or 4 years with William Jackson and Denzel Ward next to each other, I think probably it could make some Bengals fans, pretty excited. I could even hear, you know, the linebacker. When I kind of tried to throw together the guys in the conversation there, the linebackers, where you're talking about Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, or you're talking about Roquan Smith from Georgia, you know, the idea of those two, one of those two playing next to Vontaze Burfict in the nickel, I think is a pretty exciting element of this. You know, if you feel like you're getting a Ryan Shazier type, I mean, imagine that next to Vontaze. Right. You know, there's a lot of options there, but at the end of the day, They've got to get a left tackle from somewhere, right? And right. so we'll see. So speaking of, let's dive in. This is the free agency primer, not the mock draft primer. So we're going to run through some of the Bengals free agents. We've kind of been doing our Bengals free agency questions series this week. So you can head over to Cincinnati.com or open up the Bengals app and see as we kind of go through. And we really break down the five biggest questions that the Bengals have. You opened up – you led off this week with the Tyler Eifert market, which is super interesting. Tuesday was the Russell Bodine conversation, which I assume Bengals fans just hate red. Like I assume all of them, I just only could imagine them getting madder and madder with each sentence. But hey, we're just trying to tell you what the facts are. Okay, I'm not trying to make anybody mad. I know you all don't like it. We're just trying to tell you what the facts are. So that, and then we're going to get into a few more pieces of the offensive line conversation and some other stuff this week. So keep that locked on to Cincinnati.com for the rest of our questions. It gets you fully prepared as legal tampering begins next week. You can tamper legally, which is tampering is an illegal act, correct?
I believe so when it's not legal, yeah. Like it will be in a few days.
Yeah. Right. I don't know, but it is the most active week of the year. You know, that day at 4 o'clock is always pretty fun to sit back and watch as everybody does stuff except for the Bengals. So all right. So here we go. Let's dive into kind of, you know, I wanted to start with your Eifert thing. And you know, we've talked about him a little bit. I thought one of the most interesting parts of your story was his quote about not wanting to retire. And just because we have heard that from a number of guys. And I don't know, not that you expected him to be like, yeah, I did consider retiring, but I wouldn't have been surprised if you would have said that.
Right. I think and it's weird to ask a guy like in his fifth year if it crossed your mind, but when you hear Rob Gronkowski kind of lay it out there at the Super Bowl and you know, and it's just a matter of course in the NFL now. I think guys are going to get used to that after a certain amount of years. And look, the damage done to his body has been tremendous already, literally from head to ankle. So you know, it's I thought it was a worthy question, and I think, you know, Tyler's always pretty candid, and the fact that he said, well, if I was told or if I felt I couldn't be a Pro Bowler, then maybe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, right. He did put that out there that, like, you know, the I mean, the reason he's still going and obviously hoping to land the first significant payday of his career is, you know, because obviously the doctors have told him that, you know, whatever inherent risks you get or there are for playing football, you know, they're not any greater for you than they are anybody else. Which is somewhat hard to believe considering all of the back surgeries the last 2 years. But obviously, you know, that elicited a lot of, you know, mocking, if you will, on the Twitters, you know, back to where I've been on the sideline. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So
yep.
It's a fair point, but you know, and what's also interesting, Paul, is he doesn't know what his market's going to be. He knows he hasn't played. So his contract, wherever and whatever it is going to be one of the more fascinating ones this offseason, I think, in the NFL.
I feel like most years you have a pretty good feel for where guys are going to land monetarily and even most of the teams that are going to be involved. This year, I have no idea where Tyler Eifert's going to land. It only takes one team to be willing to take a risk on his potential to end up with the, you know, the money being pretty big, to be a 1 year prove it, whether it's like 1 year, 8, 2 years, 14, whatever it is. I mean, who knows, that somebody says, you know what, I'm willing to bet that I can get a year out of Tyler Eifert because he's healthy now and I'm going to go for it, right? That's all it takes. But I wonder if even one will. And here's a question. I honestly can't remember if we have answered this specifically on this podcast, or I've just talked about it off record or with people elsewhere. But if I told you the Bengals have signed Tyler Eifert today, what would you put as the percentage chance that he would be playing? If they may, and I told you, hold on, they signed Tyler Eifert and they make the playoffs this year. What would you put down as your percentage chance? You got to write it down on a piece of paper right now that Tyler Eifert is playing in that playoff game. What would your number be?
5%.
5%.
Yeah.
That's what you're betting on, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I keep coming back to. I mean, every time I get into the Eifert conversation, every time I start weighing it or anytime anybody asks me about it, I come back to that question. Are you really going to give money to 5% chance that you'll have him when it matters most, when you will be defined? And, you know, I asked Marvin Lewis if you could take a guy like Tyler Eifert and have him be a pitch count player, right? Or he needs to be like a closer, right? He needs to come in like a relief pitcher. He only plays in the red zone, and you don't really bring him in full time in games until like December. You know?
Right.
I don't know. To try to make sure that you would have him for a playoff game. Or you literally don't play him until the playoffs. I don't know. Like, I mean, he's so valuable when he's out there, but if you're gonna take away your chance of actually having him when you need him most, what's the point?
Yeah, it's tough, man. This team, if you were to bring him back, like Duke Tobin said at the combine, you know, he can't sit there and say definitively Tyler Eifert's going to be hurt in 2018 or 2019 or whatever. He doesn't know. But part of the reason that 2015 season was so special was because, you know, he was targeted 74 times. He only caught 50 passes. I mean, it wasn't like, that was an amazing – it was the 13 touchdowns.
Red zone right? Dominant. And him and Dalton in the red zone was just – I mean, you remember. You know? I mean, it was unbelievable. The timing. They were buzzing balls over top of – got through guys' ear holes. I mean, it was just – it was so – they had such a good chemistry. Dalton would anticipate every move Eifert was going to make. He knew how to use his catch radius. Eifert knew how to make every play. That was the special element of that offense that whole year, because it utilized what Eifert does best in being a matchup problem and making a lot of tough catches, and what Dalton does best in setting up the proper matchup problems, you know? You're exactly right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe with only 46 active guys, like I just, you know, this kind of goes back into some baseball conversations. You know, we've had either you and I with our Reds writers and maybe with friends about how baseball's like evolved, and there's all these things they do with pitchers and hitters in certain situations, and they only do it with 25 guys. Like, you would think the NFL at some point would figure out a way to do, but 46 players, I don't know if you can sign a guy, to be active and only be available if you get to the red zone. I mean, look how bad the Bengals were last year. They never got to the red zone.
But how much,
you need Tyler Eifert.
But how much did CJ Uzomah play? I mean, like, when CJ was the third tight end, right, how many snaps would he get per game? I mean, why can't you have two good tight ends, whether it's Croft and Uzomah or Croft and Mason Schreck or whatever, two guys that you play in most of your situations, and then when you get down to the red zone, you trot out 85, and you put them in there. I mean, I don't know, and maybe it's, you know, football is not typically something that lends itself to this kind of weird stuff. Coaches don't like to do that because they get called out for it. But I think Eifert is such a rare circumstance because he's so good at that. And you'd also love to have him in the middle of the field. So you're like, what are we going to do? Not, you know, you go back, hearken back to when they beat Seattle in 2015. Who had the greatest play of that game? I would argue Tyler Eifert's diving catch on 4th and 2 down the middle of the field. That wasn't a red zone play. So I don't know. Maybe you're situational, like they did when they brought him back from injury originally, where it's just third downs in red zone. I don't know. But right. It would take some outside the box thinking. But you know, for the right price, to have a guy who's a specialist like that, and you feel like then maybe that helps you keep him healthy. I don't know. Are we talking crazy talk? Are people like turning this off as not knowing what the hell we're talking about?
Well, I think that usage is beyond the scope of NFL general managers or coaches. I don't think any of them are willing to get to a point where they've got a specialty guy other than, you know, those kind of gadget backs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to – I don't think coaches have evolved to that point with other players. So I think if you sign Tyler Eifert, if you want him, whether you're Cincinnati or elsewhere, it's so he can play all the time. And
so you can have slot receivers and third down backs, but you can't have a red zone or third down tight end.
I don't think they like that. I mean, I don't disagree right? with you.
Why not?
But I don't think Why teams not? Think that way.
Well, they need to. They started thinking that way. I mean, with how they've evolved in how they do a lot of different things.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I think, you know, what you'll hear is, well, if we throw out Tyler Eifert and, you know, we know the balls, like they, I don't know if it adds any mystery. They like, you know, I don't know. I agree with you. I'd put it this way. I just don't think there's a team out there that's doing that or will do that just for him in 2018 or 19. So I think whoever signs him to whatever deal, they're weighing the, can he play 16 games, 65, 70% of the snaps? And what's the value of that? And I honestly do not know. What I do know is I don't believe he's going to surpass his classmates, you know, Travis Kelce and Jordan Reed and Zach Ertz. I think that has gone by. So, you know, you're looking at what, maybe $8 million annually at the top end. You know, yep. So 1 year, $8 million somewhere. Somebody give him multi-years. It's interesting.
That would be a lot. I think he would hop on 1 year, $8 million.
I think he would too.
I think he would go. I think he would go nuts to get that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's. I don't see anybody that would be willing to. Well, if they do give him multiple years, it would be with an out or a team option or no dead money where they'd be willing to cut him.
Right.
You know, I you know, for my money. Now the question is, will that be the Bengals? To me. What name the number that you think the Bengals would be willing to sign Tyler Eifert to?
I think they would pay a little more 1 year than most. So,
I have the number in my head. What was this? So I'm gonna see how close you come to the number in my head.
The 50-year option for him this year was what, like four and a half, something like that.
Yeah. 4.7.
Four seven.
I have to double check. I don't have it in front of me.
Let's just say that's what it was because that's about right. You know what? I could see 1 year five or 2 years or 2 years 11 with a lot of the Vontaze Burfict style, with the, 46 man. Yeah.
Literally the Brandon LaFell contract, right? 2 years 10 with it being 5 the first year and 4 the second and no dead money the second.
Yeah, well, with a lot of that guarantees tied in Burfict style to 46 man active. So they don't have to pay it if they'll be willing to pay it, but then they don't have to if he's unavailable.
Right. Exactly. That's where they'd be willing to go and no more.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd be willing to go any further than that for him. But it's a super interesting case because he could make somebody look really smart. He really could.
Yeah.
He could go out and have somehow stay healthy and have a Pro Bowl year and catch 15 touchdown passes. He could. He absolutely could. Especially really? In a system with a great quarterback. And Aaron, if he ended up in like a Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, think about that. Utilize guys that really know how to utilize what Eifert does so well. And if he could stay healthy, he's dangerous. All right. Let's piss people off and talk about Russ Bodine real quick. you know, we've kind of gotten into this. I don't want to go too deep. We've talked a lot about him, but only because it's been Marvin Lewis and really everybody has been pretty adamant that they like Russell Bodine and they want to do, quote, everything in our power to bring him back. And they stated that pretty clearly this week. And, you know, in my story today, you know, I ran through some of the PFF numbers. I mean, he's ninth out of 10 centers that are currently free agents out there as far as his 2017 grade. You know, he graded out at, they had him at 46.9. And when you look at the top three or four, they're all above 70 as far as grades go. You know, and PFF grades, take them with a grain of salt. I mean, you know, I love their raw numbers. I love their grades. I'm a little more wishy-washy on, particularly on offensive line. But for the most part, most people will tell you they tend to be fairly accurate. I mean, within a certain range. And I think that range, when it's 30 points difference between the top and the bottom, I think is very real. The Bengals have continued to trot Russell Bodine out there, and that's why they found him valuable. It's like a bad chicken and the egg situation. You know, is he an ascending player? The Bengals have told us yes. Whether they believe that behind closed doors, I don't know. I feel like you know what Russell Bodine is. I don't care that he's 25. He's played 64 games.
Yeah.
You know who he is. This is who he is.
I mean, you know, it's funny. The only – yes, I agree with you. The only caveat I'll leave to that is while – Marvin Lewis and Frank Pollock and Duke Tobin and Bill Lazor to some degree have all been very hesitant to say that there's this huge culture shock. That I mean, our guy Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com kept asking about a sea change, you know, at offensive line and no one wants to go there, right? No one wants to say that. Now, they don't have to say that. But maybe if they truly believe that Bengals on, I don't know, when would we know for sure what they're doing differently? Like June, the mini camps? Like
maybe.
maybe.
Yeah.
If they looked like, so maybe they know, if they think, wow, this is going to be a 180 in scheme and technique and what we're doing. And Frank Pollock is sitting there and says, look, this is how I do things. This is what I'm doing. And Russell Bodine doing that thing is an ascending player. Maybe he still has potential at the age of 25 with 64 starts, but I think they just like him, you know, whether or not that he's on his back all the time. Like,
I think that it goes back to so many things. This organization, they're so scared of something different that it's going to come in and not work out, or he's not going to be, you know, able to handle whatever the differences or changes are. They just would rather go along with what they know, even if they know it's not super, but they know it. It's devil you know versus devil you don't. But I would contend there's angels elsewhere. You know, I mean, it's like, this is not some free agent crop of centers that is going to knock your socks off. I mean, Alex Mack is not out there. You know, and that these guys that you look to, you're not going to see that huge 5-year, $50 million center contract. At least I certainly would hope not for the guys that are out there. You never know what that market's going to look like, But that's I think part of the point is that they say if it's not a huge upgrade, why don't we just stick with the guy we know and hope that we can work with him because we know who he is.
So what you're trying to say is the Bengals are Kenny Banya and trying to figure out if, you know, going to Mendy's because you know what you get, but could be better, could be worse.
This is the meal, okay? That's all I have to say. I mean,
for Kenny Banya.
Yeah, I don't know.
Our series runs in a certain order online at Cincinnati.com, but this is actually a good transition, Paul, into one of the other topics, which was, you know, could the Bengals actually land a quote unquote big name free agent or find that angel elsewhere? And since the new CBA in 2011, they have not done that. Like, you could say, oh, they're not as active as other teams, but when they are active, they're really not finding angels. I mean, they haven't had a great track record of finding not even, like, forget impact players, like just I don't like good players. You know what I mean? Like
average.
Literally average, like Brandon LaFell and Wallace Gilberry are the two best unrestricted street free agents this team has signed in 7 offseasons.
Correct.
And Gilberry wasn't even offseason. That was like, wow, this dude was released, you know, right at the start of a season.
Yeah.
You know, they're the only two players since 2011 that have earned a second contract with this club as a true unrestricted free right. agent from outside the organization. Like, they, I mean, that's a terrible track
record. It really is. And you know how much I hate making Bengals fans sad. But
just like last week, Bengals fans
get none of the good stuff. And this is the ultimate, like, some substantive proof that the Bengals get none of the good stuff. I'm going to read your list. This is the list of the notable, we'll just say basically notable. That doesn't include some of the small guys. Notable unrestricted free agents signed since 2011 by the Bengals. Here we go. Hold on to your socks. Nate Clements, Thomas Howard, Bruce Gradkowski. Oh, the genius that was Manny Lawson. Guard Max Gene Gillis, who got cut before the season started. Bo Scaife, who I don't think played a game. Travell Wharton, he definitely didn't play a game. He got hurt. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis,
yeah.
The law firm. Let's not underestimate the law firm's effect. Who got the nickname Quad? Let's go. Jason, cornerback Jason Allen, that didn't go well. Jamal Anderson.
Yeah, not that Jamal.
Jeff Fain, who was – no. He did not do the dirty bird. He was a defensive end with 2 A's. Jeff Fain, who was forced into action when all – that year that, like, all the centers got hurt and, like, undrafted Trevor Robinson had taken some snaps. Let's see. Mike Pollack, who was the guy – most known for being the guy who was blocking J.J. Watt when he picked 6 Andy Dalton in the playoffs. let's see. Tight end Alex Smith. James Harrison, who had a decent year in like the 82 snaps they gave him. Josh Johnson, who's most known for one of the favorite quotes that happened in Bengals training camp history when he shot a ball like 82 feet over the receiver's head. And Hugh Jackson just yelled out, "Holy shit!"
Yeah.
At the top of his lungs. Let's see. Aaron Maben, best known for painting on Hard Knocks. Let's see. Jason Campbell. Oh, offensive tackle Will Svitek. RJ Stanford. Marshall Newhouse. Who I mentioned who unseated recent signee Bobby Hart in the playoffs for the Giants a couple years ago. Michael Johnson, although he counts – he's probably the most money they spent on a free agent. And he counts as a outside free agent even though he was inside and then just left for a year and came right back. So it's kind of like inside. It's barely counts. A.J. Hawk, Pat Sims.
Same deal as Michael Johnson basically, you know.
Yeah, coming back, get the band back together here. Brandon LaFell, Carlos Dansby, Shockey Brown, Kevin Minter, and another getting the band back together with Andre Smith.
It's not great.
Yeah. Randy Bullock.
Yeah.
Randy Bullock. Everybody's favorite Randy Bullock. Yeah. Actually had a good season. That's the list. I'm sorry to make Bengals fans sad.
Yeah.
That's the list. And so now there's two things at play here. One, obviously unwillingness to really get nuts in the free agent market. We know that. That's no secret. The Bengals don't involve themselves. B, when they have, it has not gone well. They have not been finding the diamonds in the rough. They haven't been patrioting, as you'd say, you know, finding Nate Ebner and Chris Hogan and, like, you know, that type of stuff for Wes Welker. Like, they have not been that. They have been bad at it.
Real bad.
And so you got to kind of ask yourself, do you even want them out there trying to sign guys when this is how it typically goes?
And that's honestly to, you know, people kind of took Marvin Lewis's at his reintroductory press conference, like when he said, you know, when he mentioned free agency and people kind of misconstrued what he said there. I mean, it was pretty clear at the time. He didn't say, the Bengals need to be more active, you know, meaning X more players. What he said was this: you need to be better at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did venture into relatively uncharted waters with Kurt Coleman at the combine. Safety, you know, 21 interceptions over his career. None last year for Carolina, released. You know, I don't have the actual offer the Bengals made, but it was close. I mean, he ended up signing New Orleans for $18 million, which is six per year, which if you look at the Bengals' history, they're very mindful of contracts already on the books, meaning George Iloka already makes $6 million a year. I really don't know if they would have said, we're going to pay this guy the same amount of money as George, or you know what I mean? So maybe it was close, and the Saints had to push it with incentives to that sort of annual value. But it was close enough that he visited, took a physical, got all the medicals done, all that stuff. So maybe this year, Paul, because it's Eifert, Bodine, and what, Kevin Huber, maybe is like the three guys they'd want to really make sure they bring back. They have some more money to spend on someone, and I don't know who that is. I don't know if it's, you know, if Preston Brown's too much money, maybe. If you like Jimmy Graham, you know, we mentioned the tight end market, you know, is Jimmy Graham, who set the market at 10 and no one's ever got there since, you know, does he fall? You know, Andrew Norwell, again, another local guy, a guard. I think he's in that Zeitler territory now. So, you know, I don't know. Linebacker is interesting to me because it's been a need. But, you know, on one hand, some of their people really like Vigil and Jordan Evans. I don't know if I really like those guys. But, right. But maybe this Coleman dance, you know, I don't think it was a dance. I think they would have signed him if it didn't.
I think they were very serious about it. I mean, the coaches, coordinator, everybody was talking openly about him being a fit and a guy that they want. I mean, they weren't running from the fact that they were pursuing Kirk Coleman at all. No. I think they thought they were going to get him. They were kind of talking like they thought they had him. So, you know, that makes it interesting to me. I think it does show some – maybe they have some willingness this year to be more aggressive for what they believe to be the right guy. You know, as far as I can tell, I'm alone in thinking they should go after Jimmy Graham. But now, as many teams that seem to be lining up, you know, you're going to end up in a bidding war. And that is not something I would want to do for Jimmy Graham.
Right.
And it was sort of under the pretense that, hey, maybe you could get him at a little bit of value when you consider his age and his struggles last year. But anyway, I'll move on from that. So – you know, that's kind of the main. Yeah, you mentioned Huber. I would expect they'll figure something out with him here before too long. You know, Andre Smith is out there. I don't know if they view the Bobby Hart thing as sort of kind of making up for. I don't know if that slows them down on the Andre Smith role. If they, you know, I'm not 100% sure how that's going to play. That would be a late March situation. He's a deep wave. I mean, he's not a first or second wave guy, I don't think.
No.
Do you think he'll be a first or second wave guy? I don't think so.
I mean, he might be a second wave guy like he was last year with the Bengals signing him kind of early, if that makes sense. I mean, it was a small deal, but it was relatively early. Obviously the pretense was to start at right guard. You know, and here's all you need to know about how bad this tackle market is, and this transitions to another topic too in our series is Andre Smith. I mean, you could argue was the most valuable player on that offensive line a year ago. It was a failure to in terms of his signing to be right guard. I don't really know how interested he was in that, and clearly they thought Trey Hopkins was better. But then here's a guy who suddenly has to rotate in games at left tackle, which he hadn't done in, what, 10 years?
Right.
And then ends up starting on the right side. was it amazing? No, but you know, when the team keeps pointing to the last third of the year, and I know he got hurt against Minnesota or whenever that was, but you know, that counts. He's part of that, of like that group that quote unquote got better. Right.
Right.
So, but that said, no one's really beating on Andre Smith's door to be like, here's a 2-year deal at $10 million, which honestly, I'll be honest, I thought the Bengals should just do, because it's like, okay, now you've seen him at two spots and maybe a third at inside. And I don't even know if the team is willing to do that, you know? Yeah. So and the tackle market, generally speaking, like, could they sign a left tackle, a starting left tackle, to replace Cedric Obwehi to maybe avoid a McGlinchey at 12 if people think that's a reach? Unless you're going to pay $14 million for Nate Solder, who's just like, okay.
And just was contemplating retirement.
Yeah, so technically, yes, they could sign a left tackle. Technically. Paul, I look at this, and we're, you know, you guys go to Cincinnati.com. It's not good. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it isn't. It is not good. It is
not strong at all.
No. And that's part of the problem. I mean, they have needed offensive line help in two of the worst spots ever. Yeah. Last year's draft and this year's free agency crew. Right. And it's just they've been awful. There are teams with not a single decent tackle on their club across this league. And that tells you all you need to know about A, what the demand is, and B, what the supply is too. No one's letting guys that can actually play out the door when there's so much bad tackle play and bad offensive line play in general. I mean, it's like it's the same concept as quarterback. You know, there aren't a lot of guys that do it well. There's way more that do it bad than do it well, and it's killing teams. So that's why those guys are so valuable. That's why a middling guy like Nate Solder is so valuable, and will get so much money as the cap goes up another $10 million. You know, it's like makes you go back and regret the Whitworth decision a little bit more. Because everybody has warts. His was his age. And maybe, you know, it's like, you know, but nobody in Bengal land wants to be rehashing that right now without just completely turning us off and driving off a bridge.
It is going down as one of the biggest whiffs. Yeah. I mean, because it's not just, okay, They're probably not going to pick up Cedric Obwehi's fifth year option. So if he busts out this year with Frank Pollock and is what he is and just become – now he'll play in the league 10 years as a backup tackle. Cedric Obwehi will live a great life. You know, he'll retire with many, many millions of dollars. But for what he was supposed to be and what it caused with the clear premature exit of Andrew Whitworth, like that combo has really, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
no doubt.
I mean, and you know, and so in terms of free agent, Paul, I think the only guy that really, when I look at that list of tackles that maybe you might see the Bengals entertain is kind of Bobby Hart-esque, but without the baggage, at least that I'm aware of. And that's Byron Bell. Who exactly, after starting for 5 years basically in Carolina and Tennessee, had to take a backup job in Dallas last year, started two games, but he's got 74 career starts at the tackle spot. And you know, I'm Frank assuming Pollock. Now he's in Dallas. I don't know if Frank Pollock likes him or not. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't. So it's kind of early. Put it this way. What I was told is as we record this, it's quote unquote too early to tell what Byron Bell's market is, which means like, oh my God, like, you know, this is a late March dude a guy with 74 career starts and it's too early to tell. So I, you know, maybe I'll just throw that out there because it's just a guy who fits the profile of not 32 years old, not 10 million annually, but he started some games and he didn't quit on his team in the last week of the year.
Yes, and somebody here knows who he is. can vouch for him, you know, particularly his position coach. So, I would hear you on that. So, let's do this now. I want to run through a few Twitter questions from our strong followers who are just so mad about everything. But we love you still. So let's run through a few questions and see where we get. So I'm going to go back here to the beginning. Okay. Rationale behind keeping Jones, Johnson, LaFell under current contracts is what? This is from David Simone. Older rotation players eating up $15 million. Tough to say, well, do whatever it takes to win when you have glaring needs but won't make needed changes. I know everyone hates that. Okay, so let's talk about those three guys and why they're not cutting them. Or maybe they are. The Jones decision is still out there. And I don't think that that is clear either direction for sure at this point. But we're going to know before too long. They will wait to the last possible second because, well, it's Adam and you just never know. That's not for sure yet. I can say I think we feel pretty confident Mike Johnson and Brandon LaFell are not going to get cut. I made the argument for cutting Brandon LaFell, to clear the decks and let the kids play at receiver. But I understand the rationale a little bit of, hey, but we don't know what John Ross and Josh Malone are, and if they're going to leave us even worse off. So maybe we hold on, you know?
Yeah. And this is a great question, David, because it actually caps our series with like potential quote unquote cap casualties, if you will. And you're right. They're not cap casualties, like other teams cutting guys. Like these would be to use the money in other ways, or as you said, Brandon LaFell, open up some snaps for guys who just can't get on the field. And Michael Johnson fits that same boat. Again, guys who just don't get on the field because he's taking up snaps. But this is what the Bengals do. We say it every year. Brandon LaFell and Michael Johnson will be here. There is, yes, a little bit of locker room leadership, if you will. Johnson, for sure, it's a honoring the deal to the end. It's a two-way contract, so Bengals can do the things they like to do with signing guys. We won't rehash that again. LaFell's interesting to me, Paul, because don't we know what Tyler Boyd is at this point? And isn't he just a younger Brandon LaFell? So Boyd got hurt. He was a healthy scratch. Whatever happened that he ticked off the coaches. His catch percentage is way better than Brandon LaFell. He averages about the same amount of yards per catch. He's a younger guy, second round pick. I think that's one that to me has to happen it's like the Ray Maluga thing. Or like Omata Peko in the sense of like the front office just has to take that guy away from the coaches. And maybe Bob Ignell is like, screw, I have no loyalty. I don't care. If he's beat out, he's beat out. But why even give him that option? Adam, you're right, it's interesting because we wrote, at least initially, we thought they should keep him because you need four corners. But $6 million, and you have to wonder if Adam would be an okay guy being the fourth corner and not playing, you know?
Let me tell you this, because I'm going to go back to the same argument over and over again. If the difference between you signing Jimmy Graham and not signing Jimmy Graham is $4 million, I'm cutting the hell out of Brandon LaFell and paying Jimmy Graham. Yeah. And I'm running Tyler Boyd and John Ross out there with Jimmy Graham and Tyler Croft as my tight ends.
Yeah.
And – you know what I mean? Like if that's the difference, if you think you can do it, if you got to go a little bit over to get that guy, you've got it right there, you know, and you're not losing anything really on the outside except for maybe a slight bit of security, which you can take care of that with another middle round pick, you know, use one of your two fives again. On a receiver that you like in the deep, it's always these deep receiver drafts. You know, hell, the middle to late round picks in these drafts for the receivers are going a hell of a lot better than the first rounders are. I can tell you that much. So anyway, that's my take on all of that. Is if it's literally the difference, in your opinion, in signing a guy that can really make a difference, and not you're not really losing much. Yeah, I'd clear the decks of Brandon LaFell. Okay. With the Kevin Minter signing last year largely a bust, you see them tapping the free agent market again to fill the middle linebacker spot or leaning more towards the draft. We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I want to touch on the draft aspect. It's the other side of this is the Roquan Smith, Tremaine Edmonds. Yeah. There are going to be – hell, if you want to go Harold Landry, I mean – there are going to be some freak ridiculous athletes in that pick 12 honey hole at the linebacker position. The Bengals don't like to pick linebackers in the first round. They haven't picked one in the first or second round since Ray Maluga in 2009. They don't like to do it. They also don't like to pick defensive linemen in the first round. They haven't done that ever under Marvin Lewis. And those are the two positions that I think are the most intriguing of the opposite of the tackle. But anyway, go back to the linebacker question. I think if you're saying to me, we're taking a tackle at 12, we're taking the best tackle in this draft, I don't care, that's what we're doing. If you're saying that, I think you need to be entertaining signing a linebacker in free agency.
Yeah.
Whether it is whoever, Preston Brown, whoever, whatever you want, whoever, pick your guy. I think you need to know that right now. And I think that conversation, as awkward as it may be and as much as it may make people fight inside of those offices, needs to be known for sure right now, because you need to make a decision either way depending on how you feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, it is interesting because, you know, making decisions quickly never seems to be
no,
right in line with the Bengals, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're going to – that's the thing, though. If you're going to try to spend some money on an impact player, and my guess is – like, we'll go back to Kurt Coleman. If it's about turnovers and they feel that's a guy who can actually make an impact, then, yes, you have to make that decision quickly, because other teams are either going to bid you up, come in faster, or make their decision more quickly than you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let's keep going here. Okay, Andrew Townsend. Should we look at bringing in one of the experienced running backs to work alongside Mixon, take some snaps off him to keep him fresh, and also to help educate Gore? They are not bringing in a 34-year-old running back to take snaps away from Joe Mixon. Okay. He was called a bell cow by Duke Tobin, and they have a backup to take snaps away, and that's Giovanni Bernard on third downs. They are going to draft a running back probably on day three, and he'll come in and compete with Brian Hill. I would think Cedric Pierman, I think they still would probably be interested in bringing back for special teams.
I think so.
I don't know how that's going to fall. I mean, there's a chance he was kind of on the fence last year, so I don't know exactly how that will go, but I think finding a special teamer in the fourth spot, but I would think it's going to be a rookie that will end up filling out that room in bringing an old guy and spending actual money on a running back when you have Mixon and Bernard, and you know that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, yeah, I agree. I think Pierman would be, if you're looking for the quote unquote veteran. Well, first of all, Giovanni Bernard's a veteran and a leader and good relationship with Mixon. And yeah, you're going to need a dude to play special teams because Bernard and Mixon are not going to be those guys. So you're right, Paul. I don't think they have any qualms with a rookie or, you know, like a Trey Carson type who's like, we'll get first year service time, but it's kind of been around the last 3 years actually making the team. That's not a position that they're really too concerned about at all. Cedric maybe would be that type of guy, like $1 million, $700K down the line. Maybe, you know.
Exactly. All right. One last question. We'll make it a quick one here from Adam Gotenmoller. I might have butchered that. I apologize, Adam. Most likely position the Bengals will target in free agency: tight end, center, or left tackle.
None of those.
Center. Well, I'm counting center. I'm going to say center because I'm going to count Russell. Yeah. Right? Like, if you say they're going to go after Russ, and if they don't get him, they are going to go after somebody else. I think you can say that.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, because he's going to I mean, he's hitting free agency. He has not yet re-signed as of recording this podcast. So, I guess of the three, that's the correct one. I just think, I don't know. This line thing is so interesting. We're going to get so tired of talking about it, but that's okay.
I already am. I can say that much. But hey, whatever. I really do feel like it's the one thing. If they can solve it, I think that they're right back. You know, if they can figure out a way to solve it, I think they're right back where they want to be. I think everything else is in place for them. All right, let's. I do want to take this time to again mention 50 West Brewing Company. If you have not been down to 50 West, you head down 50 in a new town. If you have not been down to 50 West, you got to go down there. It's getting warm now. So you go down to the production works. They have their sand volleyball leagues that are all going to be kicking up. There's so much stuff you can do. They've got a canoe library down there. It is like it's for the active person. If you like to drink beer, be active, have a good time, it's a spot to go to. Go down there, have drinks. And, of course, right across the street in their grill and pub, they have all kinds of great food, and their beer is just delicious. And as you know, if you've been around Kroger here in Cincinnati, they are in stores now. They're officially canned. So my favorite, the Coast to Coast. Oh, my God. I got a six-pack of Coast to Coast sitting in my fridge right now that will all be gone by this time tomorrow. So anyway, make sure you pick up some 50 West and drink it.
Yes.
A lot of it. That's my big sale. That's pretty much all there's to it. All right. Let's move on. It is time for Power Rankings. And it's kind of a special one today. Because when it comes to this, they're only great. And that is this. Today is the 20th anniversary of The Big Lebowski. It is one of the greatest movies of all time. It is a favorite of the BBP. I would say if you added up totals, like if we were ranking our favorite movies 1 to 20 each individually, and then we added those two together to see which the two of us like the most, I'm pretty sure this would be definitely number one. Yeah. It's so here's what we're going to do. We are going to do our top. How many you got? Three?
I can do three or five, whatever. Whatever is good.
Let's do three. Top three favorite Big Lebowski quotes for use in everyday life.
For everyday life. That's the key.
Yes.
That's the key.
That is it, that, yeah, right. So I've got mine. What is your number three?
My number three. Now I'm gonna go clean. So I think
it's hard. That makes it.
But my everyday life is full of cursing, which I'm very proud of. However, we'll just keep it clean. So number three. And the context, as we all know what it is Brandt, that's marvelous. Yeah, okay. Bunny says a thing, but that's marvelous. I tend to like that's marvelous in certain situations. Yeah,
and now when you say it, do you like to drop Bunny's line in there, or do you just like the that's marvelous?
I like the context of that's marvelous. So I try to use it. Now, granted, no one is really saying Brandt can't watch though, or he has to pay $100. And then like, there's nothing ever that quite matches that lead in. But you know, that's marvelous kind of fits, especially for those who I know the movie, it tends to work.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So here's my number three. My number three is it's a complicated case. A lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many spots in life where you can drop that in. I think if I went back through my tweets, I think you could find probably at least 7 to 10 of those a year, at least. Like, it's just, it's perfect. A lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. I mean, it's good one. It's perfect. It's perfect. All right, number two.
You didn't think I was rolling out of here naked.
Now, when are you using that? I hope there's not a lot of nudity.
Well, no, because he is in reference to the Uzi that's next to him. Now, granted, no one needs to know if I'm walking around strapped up. No one needs to know that. But I think in regular conversation, depending if I'm being asked, am I carrying certain items? Am I bringing certain items? You know, you didn't think I was rolling out of here naked, did you? I mean, because I'm not.
I like it. Yes. All right. So my number two, this is not nom. There are rules. Okay. is a great everyday life.
Yeah.
Lebowski quote, which I take out, this is bowling, and you can put in, this is whatever.
Yeah.
So you can kind of make it work. You can kind of make it work for you. Or you can just yell over the line at people, which is also very good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Number one, what's your number one?
How could it not be? I'm sorry. I wasn't listening.
No doubt. That one is great.
And that one is. My wife may or may not want to throw a coffee cup at my head after saying such a thing.
But she probably will.
Yeah.
There's so many. I feel bad leaving a bunch off. Like, there's so many. And I feel like we're kind of going a bit obscure. This is like the hardcore Lebowski fan version, maybe a little bit. Because there's, you know, Shut the F Up, Donnie, The Dude Abides. Like, there's That Rug Really Tied the Room Together. I mean, there's so many that you could go with. To me, my number one favorite one to use, it's because it's dismissive and stupid at the same time. It's just, yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
It's just, you can use that at any point in time, and it pretty much shuts down everything. Like, there's not really a lot of places to go from that. People just look at you crooked, and then you just move on. It's great. 8-year-old's dude is probably my favorite line from the movie.
Right. right.
But it doesn't really fit in everyday life very often.
No, it doesn't.
Don't want it to. Don't want it to anyway.
Right.
But anyway, so that's a good top three. It was kind of a power ranking, but not with our negative aspect, because we're all positive here in 2018. We've been positive this year.
Kind of.
You turned over a new leaf?
Well, we did the first part of the year.
Yeah, you weren't even mad at stuff for a while.
But all we've been talking about is the every powers that be for Russell Bodine and you know, whatever else that Bengals fans can't have and enjoy.
Yeah. None of the good stuff. All right. Well, are you mad about something?
You know, real quick, I'm not going to dive into the politics of this, but just generally speaking, I think, you know, the NFL owners or whatever, whoever is out there talking about this stuff. And when I say this stuff, I mean the kind of the residual anthem demonstrations from a year ago. So what I mean by that is what is making me mad is like these owners can't get out of their own way.
No.
And they don't learn a lesson. So at the combine, Andy Reid had to stand up there and address reports of ownership, Clark Hunt trading Marcus Peters because he didn't like what Marcus Peters did during the anthem. Then the Houston Texans had to issue a statement about reports that they're not going to sign anyone who demonstrated during an anthem. And now, you know, Stephen Ross is out there. We're not going to – like, look – we get it. billionaires, like, you don't like it, whatever. That's fine. Like, but here we are in March or February when it was the combine. Like, it just makes, like, I'm not saying you don't have an opinion. I'm not saying, like, have your opinion. You run a business, you have a play. That's fine. I guess to me, Paul, just, it's not, it shouldn't even be discussed right now.
No.
Like, the owners' meetings haven't happened yet, which, you know, you'll be down there, and I'm sure this will come up on what they're going to do with you know, what they should have done, which was never take money and make this thing to begin with. But just why? Oh, it was such a pain, you know, just talking about it, dealing with Twitter and Facebook and all that other crap, and, like, here these guys are. Let it go. Like, there's no game. There are no games. There are no national anthems. There are no discussions. Just why? Why are you bringing up and talking about it so it's out there? I guess it's just, for me, Paul, it's like, oh, I want more mock drafts. I want your mock drafts. I want free agency. I don't want this. That's making me mad. Just like, oh, get out of your own way.
I hear you.
You know?
And I'm going to give you your mock drafts so you don't have to worry about this anymore. I feel bad now. I'm gonna do like three more this week just after that rant. I'm feeling for you. It's really getting under your skin. I feel you. So for me, what I'm happy about, you know what I'm happy about? Bullpen cars.
Yeah. Dang,
bullpen That's cars.
So That's why what we should be talking about.
Why did we ever get rid of bullpen cars? Why did anyone get – you know what I want? Because this is the day and age of customization, right? So like – everybody should have their own bullpen car that is just a giant head of them, okay? And so you see that you don't know who's in it, except the giant head is that person. So, like, for the Reds, Raisel Iglesias is just a giant Iglesias head, and it comes rolling out of the bullpen and all the way out. Or why can't we get zip lines, right? We're adding netting. So you've got more areas to connect. Why don't they, like, I think the bullpenners could come and just zip all the way down and, like, slide into the pitcher's mound.
Right.
So if we're
you know what happened. You know what happened. Like, the reason bullpen cars went away is probably some Bull Durham type of thing went down, like, late at night, you know, after a game.
Yeah.
And somebody rolled one of those things. Yeah. And some dude ends up on a DL with, like, the flu, but really, like, he, you know, sprained his ankle, like, you know, rolling a
bullpen rolling car.
Well, how many golf course outings have we gone to, where golf carts have been flipped?
Dude, I worked in a golf course. I worked in a golf course. And it was one of these bad munis where you would just get the drunk outings would come out where they'd have 150 bros and they would rack up like $3,000 in alcohol. And I would be in charge of going throughout the course to find all the discarded or rolled carts and get them all towed back in. I've pulled more carts out of bunkers in my life than pretty much anybody I know, because that's just what it would happen. Look, when this was back in the day, this area, it's currently just a cow pasture now, but it was Western Row Golf Course. Anybody from the Cincinnati area that ever went to Western Row Golf Course can tell you how crappy this golf course was, and it was meant strictly for, like, jorts and natty light. Like, that is how they rolled out there, and people were getting – drunk and flipping carts. That was pretty much how it rolled. Great job for me, because I collect the tips as the beer guy too, and there were lots of those sold. People get rowdy on a golf cart, so you got to hope that wasn't a thing. That hopefully it doesn't happen and that take the bullpen cars away from us. Because I'm excited to see what MLB teams will do to make their bullpen cars, like, you know, viral, right? That's going to be the thing. Everyone's going to want to try to have the coolest bullpen car. So I have high hopes for MLB this year. And I mean, it's what I'm maybe most excited about with this new season that's getting ready to start.
Yeah. Hey, did you get more tips if you wore jorts at that place?
You're my kind of guy, right? No, I got more tips if I just got them their beer and it was cold as fast as possible. That was pretty much it. And then every time I would show up, you know, it would be some comment about how I wish it was a beer girl, right? Like it was always, you know, it's why is it got to be like that? Why can't I just be a nice guy bringing you some beer, you know? But then I wouldn't be at the Cheap Jort mini course. So, but anyway, all right. What that about wraps us up. Reminder to everybody that loves the pod and listens all the way through. Thank you for listening to the end. But also next week is going to be different. This is our primer for free agency. We're going to let the first wave or two go through of free agency, and then we're going to have a reaction pod. So keep an eye out for that. We'll have that for you after the first couple of waves of free agency. Then we're going to hopefully be back on the right track. So, all right, I'm done unless you've got anything else left to say.
Nah, I'm good. I wasn't listening. So we're...
Oh, man. Well, market zero. I'll talk to you later.
Market
zero. Have a good one.
All right, brother.